my calculations are correct, when this baby hits 88 miles per hour, you're gonna see some serious shit.
Do you really think you have a chance against us, Mr. Cowboy?
Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.
It's showtime.
Right, welcome everybody to another episode of the VHS Strikes Back. I am one of your hosts, Chris, and my co-host and very good friend is Dave.
Hey there, Chris, and hello to our listeners out there. Welcome to the VHS Strikes Back, the show where we dust off the old video player and go on a nostalgic journey to look at the good and the bad movies of yesteryear. Now, Chris, what are we going to review this week?
Well, Dave, we are going to review, and it's a Patreon pick from our good friend and supporter, Stephen. We'll go back to 1975, and me and you, Dave, were not even in this world at this point when this came out, and it's Jack Nicholson's probably, well, most famous movie for awards, accolades, everything, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. So we talked about it last week, Dave, and I just want to slightly pull you up on something, actually, Dave. I said, just reading the bio, that Michael Douglas was a producer, and you went, it's fucking not. And I'm like, it fucking is, because his dad was the original star of the Broadway show and was supposed to star in it. So what have you got to say to that little bit of Chris Phelps actually doing some proper research for a change?
Proper research. So, I must say, Chris, I saw it, that it was, because Kurt Douglas, we've gone straight in for the trivia there, haven't we? So yeah. Kurt Douglas had kind of taken it to the stage, hadn't he? And then kind of bought the rights, you know, and handed it off to a younger Michael Douglas. And as soon as I saw that, I was like, oh, fucking hell. I was taking the piss out of Chris last week for it. You know, not having any better knowledge. But no, I do have to say, Chris, you know, I was born in early 2000. Yeah, right, you fucking wish. In 1976. This came out in November 1975. So I was in existence. I hadn't been born, but I was, you know, gestating or whatever the right fucking word was. So I was little fucking few cells or something around that time, I think. So
Dave, there's nothing I can say off the back of that that'll just sound right. So I'll just let you carry on with that one.
I mean, if it was the summer, it'd become even more questionable. But no, I think I'd have been a tiny little fetus by that point. But anyway, you were right. I wouldn't be a tadpole. That was earlier in the summer.
I was 78, Dave, so I was probably still being thrown into the Kleenex at that time or whatever it was. But there you go.
your siblings, your millions of siblings. Yes.
But Dave, I've got to say, Dave, I've got a bit of a, and I know this could be quite a touchy subject with yourself, and I don't want you to, obviously it's quite a, you know, interesting movie, and it deals with you know, people's ups and downs in life. But how have you been this last week, Dave?
Fuck off. Don't give me the Holly Willoughby. Like, just because United have won the game in the fucking FA Cup that no one gives a toss about anymore.
Well, there was 10,000 Liverpool fans when I was in Old Trafford. They looked really concerned. I mean, this week it's gone really quiet. I mean, I've messaged you a little bit, Dave. I've messaged your our friend Ben. John Hammond. I got a little bit off John Hammond. All these Liverpool fans, you know, these people who love to go at me as a United fan. Nothing. And I've got to say, Dave, you know, hand on heart, it was a weird game, up and down, everything. But the fact that the last kick of the game was the winner, well, it wasn't really, because the ref decided I'm putting 4 minutes on because I'm an absolute wanker and I've got my Liverpool shirt underneath it just in case, throw it in the mix.
Absolute bullshit.
But anyway, Dave, it was glorious. The 7-0 last year, you've absolutely dicked us in some of the games. But I was more than happy to take that victory and move on to the mighty Coventry, Dave. So anyway, just wanted to see how you was, mate. I've been concerned, that's all.
Well, you know, having got already one trophy in the bag for this season and then shooting on two other more higher priority fronts, I think this is a necessary thing to not have a distraction. You know, we don't have to worry about those two games. And I look forward to seeing City dicking you in the final.
Well, you say that, Dave, but if we rewind a year ago, I seem to remember you saying that the cup that you've won, that we won last year, was some sort of Disney product? Was it a Mickey Mouse cup? I believe the words, something like that. Anyway, but if you want to take that,
I don't think I.
It's fine.
We won it a
Dave.
Couple of years ago. We won both of the domestic cups. So I.
It's fine. Don't worry.
It's okay because I still look at this positively because this could be, you know. In fact, there's multiple possible futures. We're getting all X-Men now, but you know, there's one possible future where Ten Hag gets more time. That would be good. There's also another possible future where you get Gareth Southgate, which would be even fucking better. So,
however, Dave, by December 2024, when Klopp's legacy's gone, I will be sat here with my big cigar, like Boss Hog out of fucking Dukes of Hazzard, just sat here, just chilling, loving life, because. As Ten Hag says, Dave, era's come to an end and I'm fucking loving it. It's not your era I'm worried about, as it's City's era because that's fucking keeps going. But anyway, let's bring it back to the movies.
Leicester, though, have got charged. They're not even in the Premier League anymore.
It's terrible.
City are just fucking stood there with a big cigar, like, with their 115 charges. But I am concerned about, obviously, the post-Klopp era. But we've obviously got a return match in the league. Now, I'll put it straight out there. I'm not just being a sore loser. I genuinely don't really care that much this season, you know, about the FA Cup, just because we, like I say, we've won one already. We've got another couple to go to after this. It's the league game.
Yes.
And if we lose that, then I will be upset.
Yeah. Well,
so there you go. I'm putting it out there.
If you beat us, I hope that you give me the same stick I've just given you, Dave, because all's fair in banter.
With that's interest. What football,
well, of course. And I'll deserve it for being a cocky fucker. But there you go. Small victories and all that. It's been a shocker being a United fan recently. But there you go. Anyway, back to the movie, Dave. So, do you remember anything about this? I know I've gone off on a bit of a tangent.
Funnily enough, I mean, we're having a bit of the old banter, Chris, having a bit of a laugh. Probably not going to have too many more when we're talking about this movie. You know? So the only thing, I mean, like I say, I was kind of in existence, but not actually born at this point when it came out. But I do remember it just being mentioned in, you know, like grown-up conversations. Now, I have no memory of like what that was, but so I just knew of it. It was something that was kind of being discussed. Being in the north of England, you know, in the late 70s, early 80s as well, it probably only come onto the cinema fairly recently. So, I remember that. But I also remember just Jack Nicholson being in, you know, other movies as well. I think I said last week, I never really liked him when I was younger. There's something about him. And he has that real fucking alpha male, cocky kind of attitude, and I didn't like him as a person because of the actors that he played, and I don't know how much you can separate him and the you know, as the actor slash his characters here, but I kind of had it in my mind kind of what this was, but it's ended up being something completely different. So it's another great thing. I know we say it many times, but having someone else pick these for us is so fucking much in our favor, because I'd have never picked this, Chris. It'd have been a long time before I'd have got to this one. But I mean, this film is huge, and we've talked before about the, you know, the fact we haven't dipped into the 70s maybe as much as we should. But Chris, this one, the Big Five Academy Awards. So there's only three films that have done that in history. So one is It Happened One Night from 1934, and the only other one, apart from One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, is The Silence of the Lambs. So the Big Five are Best Picture, Best Director, Best Actor, Best Actress, and Best Screenplay. Three films in history have done that, and this is one.
And you know what, Dave? All that stuff, I didn't even know any of that until I was doing the research myself. And I was, you know, you're right, because I know the name. I know the movie. I remember my granddad had it on a video, you know, like recorded off when it was on TV or whatever, but never watched it, never had any interest with it. Got it completely mixed up with The Shining. Here's Johnny, because I said it last week and you were like, I think that's The Shining, Chris. And you were right, Dave, I think. But I was completely wrong. Because it just, you're right with Jack Nicholson. Obviously, I remember, for me, he's the Joker. I did make a rather sweeping statement when we did, saying that he was better than Heath Ledger. I've now got Heath Ledger's tattooed on my forearm, Dave, with Batman above him. That's a really silly statement from me, Dave. I take all that back. I was actually wrong. I think I was, what was going on about? He's a good Joker.
High on fucking Batman.
Yeah, I don't know what I was doing. But no, I did not know it was so well received, the awards. It actually won more awards than ones it didn't. If you look at the reel there, the nominations for different characters, and especially Jack Nicholson, unbelievable. Unbelievable. And it's at 93%, Dave, on Rotten Tomatoes, with a user thing like 9 out of 10. You know what I mean? 83 on Metacritic. It's. I didn't know it was that well received, well respected, you know, the awards. So yeah, it would be interesting with this one. I never would have picked this. It's not my sort of movie at all. There's no way. And that's the great thing about having patrons and people having different interests in movies to throw them our way into. That's the whole point of it. And I love that. I love it because I'm glad I've watched it and I've ticked it off my list, Dave. I think next week's going to be the same. That's going to be another one that I'll get ticked off my list potentially, but there you go. But yeah, so I'm looking forward to what with this one, because like you say, we're joking and we're having a chat about football. It's a completely different movie to what we would cover, but when we've done these sort of movies, we always end up with good talking points, so I'm really looking forward to that.
So Chris, should we get into the trailer?
Let's go.
Why do you think they might think that?
They don't make a bit of sense to me.
Do you think there's anything wrong with your mind, really?
Not a thing, Doc. Excuse me, miss. Do you think it might be possible to turn that music down so maybe a couple of the boys could talk?
Your hand is staining my window.
God almighty, she's got you guys coming or going. A little change never hurt, huh? A little variety.
Holy Jesus!
Oh, come on. You're not going to say that now. You're not going to say that now. You're going to pull that henhouse shit now. When the vote the chief just voted, it was 10-9. I want that television set turned on right now!
I don't think he's overly psychotic.
No, I want something!
I think he's dangerous.
Jesus, I mean, you guys do nothing but complain about how you can't stand it in this place here, and then you haven't got the guts just to walk out. I mean, what do you think you are, for Christ's sake, crazy or something? Well, you're not.
Hey, wait a minute. Hold it!
See how easy it is?
We're from the, state mental institution. This is Dr. Cheswick, Dr. Tabor, Dr. Scanlon. I'm Dr. McMurphy.
Hey, Mikey! What? All right, take him over! Get on over here! Get up, Tate!
How about it, you creep, you lunatics, mental defective?
Thank you, Mac. Thank you. I'll never forget you.
In late 1963, 38-year-old Randall McMurphy is on an Oregon work farm for the statutory rape of a 15-year-old girl. With several previous arrests for assault, he pretends to be insane to get himself transferred to a mental institution and avoid hard labor. The ward is dominated by head nurse Ratchet, a cold, passive-aggressive tyrant who intimidates her patients. Now, Chris, what do you reckon to the opening of this movie?
Well, Dave, 1975, The music's good. I like the music score at the start, and it's quite an eerie song, isn't it, for like what they're doing. But I've got to call out the fucking his character. The fact that, you know, he's in there for statutory rape and he's supposed to be like the person we vouch for. That's an interesting, even in 1975, that's an interesting plot device for his character. And the fact that when he's even getting interviewed at the start, he's making it out like it's nothing, like, you know, anybody would do that sort of thing. I don't know. I thought it was a bit uncomfortable day. That's not aged well at all for me, that bit at the start.
Yeah, I think you're right. And what was it? It was something like Spielberg and George Lucas were chatting about the Indiana Jones thing. That 15 seems to be the cutoff, I think, in the 70s, where they're like, yeah, that's kind of, yeah, legally, you know, it's not allowed, but it's kind of okay, isn't it? I was thinking that. I was thinking, oh, fucking hell, is it, because he's our main protagonist, is that where it's supposed to be, where you're supposed to be like, yeah, it's not that bad, really. He's just a normal bloke, you know, boys will be boys kind of thing. So I just, yeah, I thought you might pick up on that one as well. You know, I wanted to highlight it. But, yeah, I don't think that is as aged well. But, you know, I don't think this is as clear. I'm not going to keep my cards close to my chest, Chris. I thought, you know, watching this again, you feel the 70s pace, don't you? You feel it going fucking slow initially, and you're like, oh yeah, I've got to calibrate my mind into 70s movie mode. But I fucking loved this movie. And it's one of those that after the movie, you know, it really haunts you and it lives in your mind, and you sort of thinking back to it. Honestly, it's one of those movies I didn't get to watch it a second time just because it's over 2 hours. I just can't carve out another couple of hours that easily. But I was thinking I might watch this again before we review it. And I don't think it's as clear cut as, like, Jack Nicholson is our really good protagonist. You know, he's definitely the more the point of view character. Apparently, the original novel this was based on, it was all from the chief's perspective, but, you know, they sort of switched it around. I don't think he is so obviously the great protagonist, and Nurse Ratched is this, you know, mustache twirling villain. You know, it's so complex. And, you know, it's more about those kind of society constructs and how we interact and stuff. And listen, if this is not the podcast for deep fucking cinematic analysis, by the way, if you've got to this point, you've not heard us before, there's probably loads of other podcasts that have done deeper, you know, real studious academic research into this. But it is one that I think is so fucking layered, and you can really kind of get, okay, I get it. This is why it is that kind of Oscar bait. You know, it's definitely, it's not a fucking happy Hollywood ending by any stretch, is it? You know, it's just, it really, really makes you think. And I think the reason he's in there is the one bit where I'd say, okay, that really doesn't age well. I think if you're watching this in 75, you're kind of brushing that off, but, you know, I just don't know. I think the rest of it, you know, because it is set in 1963, I think the rest of it ages really, really fucking well.
Yeah, and I think you're right. I mean, I've said this on here before, that comment from the bloody Sweeney. You know, Dennis Waterman's there driving down the road with the driver, George, and he's like, oh, I love a girl in a school uniform. And you're like, holy fuck.
That's a love of a schoolgirl, isn't it?
Yeah, something like that. It's just like, what the fuck? You know what I mean? But like you say, it was that sort of accepted, which it never should have been, sort of thing. So yeah, so, and I don't want to harbour on about that, but it's just one of the things that straight away you look at it and go, that's a bit weird. Because he's 38 as well. It's not like it's not like the whole point is he's been sent to prison because it's a miscarriage of justice. It's his ex misses his daughter, and they've collaborated this story, and he's trying to prove his innocence. Oh, no, he double downs on it, doesn't he? Oh, yeah, you never would have guessed, Doc. And I'm like, what the fuck? You know what I mean? But anyway, you're right what you've just said about that. But I do think that the cast is really good. And I'm sure you've read it yourself. The trivia there's actually proper mental health patients in the movie who are actually extras, you know. So I think because of the world we live in now, and mental health is so prominent, and everyone is more aware, a lot of what these guys are going through in this movie, and the characters, obviously, it's just basically, right, take the drugs, we're going to commit you for, you know, however long, and it's voluntary, or whatever. It's really hard to see. But I also think that it's, what's this? So it's nearly 50 years ago this movie came out, and we're more aware of it, but the way people are treated when they're having these like mental health episodes, and the way they just sort of think it, not a lot's changed really, I don't think, Dave. Does that make sense? Like, I found, I'm a mental health first aider at work, so you read all that. I don't mean I'm an expert, I'm not. It's just something growing up, and I'm sure you're the same with people around who are having, had someone close to who's had a mental breakdown. So, and not to get too heavy, but never really understanding it until I was older. Do you know what I mean? Understanding their behavior, their mood swings, and it can be, you know, it can be the psychological stuff is what got me more, but you've got the violent side of it, you've got everything. And it's all wrapped into these different characters in there, you know, with the mental health things. Yes, we're more aware, it's more controllable, and people are less likely to be committed these days. But I've had a couple of, well, I've actually had a couple of people, I know someone who, close to me, was actually had to go into one of these institutions years ago because of their own safety, for their own safety. So yeah, and it's not to be too thingy, but I think it sticks with me, and you're right, it sticks with you. They're like, these people just want to live a normal life, but they're too scared to go outside the walls of this like mental asylum because they're worried for themselves or maybe other people. And obviously, you know, so yeah, I think they do a really good job of like showing the different stages of mental health, even if it is a movie and sometimes it's a bit exaggerated.
And it's interesting that I feel like it hopefully has changed. I mean, I don't think you don't have the same mental institutions, do you, anymore?
No.
Like you did back then. But it wasn't obvious from the movie. I mean, there might have been some dialogue that I saw or that I missed, but I saw that apparently, you know, his character, he's come out of the Korean War. Right, so it's in 1963. This would have been, I think, when the Vietnam War. It's about the 50s, wasn't it? The Korean War, and then, you know, I think it's a bit later in the 60s. So this is in between the kind of Korean War and the Vietnam War, and I feel like we have moved on a bit, but I do feel like we're at this weird kind of inflection point where, like, some parts of society are like, yeah, we need to, you know, talk about our feelings more, and like recognizing things like depression. It's not just about like snapping out of it and just, you know, cheer up, you know, it is. So there's parts of that, but then you have, I fucking saw this thing like Joe Rogan, he's like, oh, can you imagine like these days, all the fucking snowflakes would be out and whatever, and just, you know, there's still a lot of society which is just like, oh, these fucking snowflakes, you know, just stiff upper lip and all of that. So I think things are getting better, but it's not without its conflict as well. But it is, as I kind of look into the past, it is really, really interesting. Like you say, you've got all these people. The cast, Chris, it's unbelievable, isn't it? This was Christopher Lloyd's first film. And then you've got fucking little Danny DeVito there as well. I had no idea. Like this cast was so, you know, it's got so well-renowned actors, but they've all got their little nuances, and a lot of it, you know, you think Nicholson is like a bit of a chancer, isn't he, you know, ultimately, but you think, well, he's probably in there because he has got some kind of trauma coming out of the war, the things he'd have seen back then. So, you know, and then he's obviously trying to get out of doing the hard labor. So he's sort of pretending he's not quite all there or whatever. But he ends up just being ground down by the system. And you see all of these individual characters who, a lot of them are there voluntarily, we find. But again, they're almost in there because it's a safer place than the society that looks down on, you know, like you got Billy who's, you know, got an oppressive mother, and he's sort of in there just to get away from her. You know, what's the other character? They wind him up about his wife. And yes. You know, he's sort of trying to get away from his marital situation, and so, but they're getting out of society and into this other oppressive regime of the institution. So yeah, really, really fucking interesting stuff.
Yeah, I was the same, because I was going into this thinking, oh, fuck, you know what, it's 2 and a bit hours long, oh my, 2 hours 15, I'm like, oh my God, what's it going to be? But I think it's one of them movies where the character building and the dynamic of McMurphy and Nurse Ratchet, who's at the start, you're sort of thinking, she's actually all right, you know what I mean? But then yeah. It comes in, it's that controlling, coercive, as we all know now, like the controlling, coercive stuff, the gaslighting stuff, it's all, she's very clever. The character and the actress Louise Fletcher, who got awards as well. And I read somewhere there, but apparently, because people thought she was like that in real life, because everyone stayed in character. One day she stood in the middle of the studio with just a bra and knickers on. And she said, this was to show everyone that I can have fun. I'm thinking, well, I don't know what that was, but there you go. That could
dangerous
be something.
Thing in the 70s,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Well, exactly. Yes. Well, let's skate over that pretty quickly. But I will say, Dave, it's a serious subject and it's a really powerful movie. And I'm so glad that we've covered it and appreciate Stephen picking it now. But I've got to call some stuff out, Dave, on the movie. I've got to. The fucking security at this fucking mental asylum, right? No, you look at like Sarah Connor in Terminator 2. You know what I mean? She's in this fucking asylum, same sort of setup, isn't she? You know what I mean? She's got to literally, you know, she's got a hair clip to get handcuffs off. She's got to kick the shit out of everyone. Then the Terminator comes and saves her. It's like a prison. We've got, oh no, in this one, anybody can just fucking waltz out, can't they? You know, he's a prisoner. He's a criminal who's blagging, so we think, to say that he's mentally unstable, so he gets a cushy life so he can do a runner, basically, doesn't he? He wants to get out. He sees it as a loophole because he's been serving time in jail for the statutory rape. But at any point, and I know some are voluntary, but at any point, the way they set it up, it's like a prison. The security is fucking rubbish, Dave. Let's be honest. It's garbage. I mean, when he takes them on the bus and he jumps the fence and all that, there's no questions asked. It's not like the police are coming running, going, oh my God, we've got 10 mental health patients done a runner. Let's find them. No, let's just go on a fucking boat trip around the fucking thing. You know, I did like when he names the doctors, Dr. Martini, Dr. Fingin, and he's saying to that fucking, that fisherman, and he walks off, yeah, from the local mental institute. But that doesn't make any sense, does it? Because the next minute, they're playing fucking basketball, aren't they? And it's like, I mean, was it like an open type mental health institute? I couldn't get it.
Yeah. I mean, for me, it's, you got different levels of security, haven't you? So you're real fucking dangerous criminals, you know, you'd expect them to be in like a maximum security prison where they've probably risk assessed, you know, all of the ways that, you know, people could possibly get out. And there's like safety checks, you know, checks and balances to make sure that, you know, okay, if someone got out this way, you know, there's something else to stop them. And they've thought about all that shit. I think for asylums like this, I don't think, you know, they'd go to that same degree. I think, you know, half of the people there are there voluntarily, you know, and a lot of the others, you know, you see people walking around, you know, who've been lobotomized, which is an interesting foreshadow for later. But you know, I just don't think the emphasis is on the security in a place like this.
No, and maybe not, but you're probably right, because that's what I thought. I got to speak to Dave about this, but it was the fact that they've always got nurses around them, aren't they? Male, female, looking after him, controlling them, but also for their own safety and everything else. And not once did anybody go, hang on a minute, where's all these people gone? There's no real explaining it till later on. And it's like, well, it's not like they did it at night. It's not like The Great Escape, where they're all stood in the yard dropping fucking soil down the pants and they're building a tunnel. He just jumps the fence, gets the school bus and fucks off on a date. I mean, I do think that's a great segment, Dave. I do think that's a really good, like, showing him real life. I think that is like a really good moment in the movie, because obviously, I mean, he picks his girlfriend. Is it Candy, his girlfriend? And I'm just like, she's not bothered that he's just been sent down for, you know, having a bit with a 15-year-old girl. But there you go. Come and join us, Candy.
Is it girlfriend, or I thought well, this was a lady of the night, Chris.
Yeah,
well,
yeah. But probably Candy is. Yeah, I can't really see that being a real name. You're probably right, Dave. But I went with it. I went with what he told the guys anyway on the bus. But yeah, I thought that was really nice, and the boat thing, and you could see the way the actors did it was like that sort of. I know other people have been in jail, and they say that they come out, and it's the air smells differently. And it's that sort of free air, like they come out and they're like, everything's different, everything. And I did like that, like break of normality for the people. And obviously McMurphy's getting to know, like you say, the voluntary way. I'm here because, of, like you said, about my wife and all. And it's like finding out why people are there, aren't they? Because there is people who are like him. Some of them are not very good at articulating themselves because they have mental health problems. But some of them it is because of the system's grounded down or the wife or whatever. So it's really interesting. I think the dialogue's really good as well. I think the whole point of the movie, I think I got it after about 40 minutes in. I was like, ah, right, I understand what this is trying to say. And also, I do think it's ahead of its time, Dave. 50-odd years, and there's only a few bits that have aged badly. You could watch it. We have just watched it for the first time, but I could watch it again. And I don't think you take stuff away from it. You won't be like, oh yeah, that's of it. I think there's only a few bits in the movie where you go, oh, you know, that's a bit dodgy or whatever. But yeah, the rest of the movie tells a really, really good story about mental health, to be honest.
Yeah, and like I said about the cast, but everyone is acting their asses off. Oh, you know, the fact that you spot like, oh fucking hell, it's Doc Brown. You know, and he's not that different from when he's in the Back to the Future. You know, but every character has their own kind of nuance and you know their backstory and everything. And I think that's what makes it so layered as well. Like obviously the writing's one thing, but the acting performances as well. Because the guy, I said about all the Academy Awards that they did win, but the guy who played Billy, so Brad Dourif, he was nominated for Best Supporting Actor as well. And I knew I recognized him. He's fucking Wormtongue from Lord of the Rings years and years later. But it really, really does make you think. And one of the other trends I've noticed from the kind of 70s movies that we have gone back, you know, not the ones like Jaws, because that was from the same year, wasn't it? You know, I think this was only second to that in terms of box office. But a lot of them do have this slower pace all the way through. And then they have that crescendo at the end. You know, all of the stuff has led you to that point, to be at the end of the movie. And everything that went before just leads you up to that holy shit moment at the end. Like the conversation. That was another one, wasn't it? Where it was like really slow all the way through. And then it's at the end and it's like, fucking hell, you know? And so it's interesting because now, I mean, they try and chop so much into every act of the movie, don't they? And you know, many people have talked about the change in movies and like being dominated by comic book movies for the last decade or so. But yeah, it's this kind of slower pace. And like you say, you start off and you think, well, McMurphy's a bit of a dick.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then Nurse Ratched, well, she's just sort of doing her job, isn't she? You know, she shouldn't seem too bad. But then you see these little passive aggressive things like the whole vote thing where, you know, he wants to watch the World Series game and she's like, oh, we could put this to a vote. And then she knows exactly how it's going to go to the vote. And then the second time round, when McMurphy's kind of, you know, getting a bit of influence within the group, then they vote to show the game. But she's like, oh, no, but everyone here, you know, she changes the rules, doesn't she? It's not just the people in this conversation, everyone in the room. And you got all these lobotomized patients and stuff walking around, just not able. So she's in control of that situation. You're like, oh, that is fucking evil. You know, it just you are just emasculating these guys and just really, you know, twisting the knife. And it is that real passive-aggressive character. So she's much more subtly the villain of the piece. But, yeah, really fucking clever. And it needed that time. It needed that build-up to get you to that point, I think.
Yeah, I agree. And I think you're right. I mean, what a character she is, because she's not a screamy, shouty baddie as such. If you're playing the good, if you call him, you know, like you say McMurphy, if you put him against her, there, you know, she's not like that. It's the psychological side of it, and that is so clever to show on screen towards the audience, you know, to make us go against her and be like, you know, she's not like she's going in and just fucking like, you know, stabbing them with drugs or giving them drugs and you know, do you know, stuff like that, or she's like really screaming and getting really over the top and she's just so dominate, you know, she dominates everything other than when this McMurphy comes in. It's that she's very calm, isn't she? But yeah, the way she looks at people, it's almost like when you're at school, isn't it? It's that thing of being at school. You've got a teacher that everyone is scared of or like respects, but they never actually ever do anything, but they've just got that aura about them where you're like, I don't want to fuck with them. I don't want to push it too much. And they can just look at you, or like a parent, I suppose. They can just look at you and you go, oh, I'm fucked here. I need to shut my mouth. I need to, you know, like when you're a kid, like I need to just, you know, I need to rein it in. And very, very clever acting from Louise Fletcher. Honestly, really, really good character. Really, really. And it works with the way McMurphy is so all over the place, isn't he? So erratic and like boisterous. And Nicholson's good in it, Dave. He is good in this.
Yeah.
Very good. I can get it. This is the movie. I know there's loads of movies I've seen him in, but and obviously he's always been older when I've seen him, but this is the movie where I understand what the hype is about him as an actor, if I'm being honest.
Yeah, I'm with you 100%. And I said, you know, I don't know what it was. I think just he plays a lot of dickhead characters, I guess. You know? That's probably the thing why, you know, again, you can't separate the actor from the character. But here, you're like, yeah, okay, I get it now. And I think probably this changed his career, didn't it? He played a lot of similar actors after this, where he just is that kind of alpha male, disrupting things, you know, the whole status quo. You know, he's just coming in there and he's not particularly, he's not doing it for philanthropic reasons, is he? He's not trying to get people to break out of this hold that Nurse Ratched's got on everyone. He's just being himself, you know. He likes a drink, he likes his women, he likes to watch the baseball, play a bit of basketball and stuff, he likes to have a laugh, and then he's just ground down by society. And I suppose, Chris, there's actually a Netflix show called Ratched, so and it's about her before the movie,
right?
So it's only one season. And I thought, oh, you know what, I'm going to have to watch this. So I haven't watched it yet, but I will at some point. Came out in 2020. So a bit of a coincidence, really, that we're just watching this movie for the first time, you know. In my head, in recent years, but it's like 4 fucking years ago now, isn't it? So, God, time's going quick. But, but here's a question, Chris. You say about, like, teachers and parents and stuff, and the stuff that Ratched's doing, I mean, how many fucking Ratcheds have you known in your life? I think I've known a few. You
know, I've worked with a few, right.
That sort of subtle, passive-aggressive manipulation, I just think, fucking hell, it is. We can all watch the movie and agree, okay, because the way the events that happen, you can agree she's the villain of the movie, but fucking hell, I've known a fair few of these.
Yeah, and you know what, Dave? I'm proper going on a downer here. I watched the show yesterday on, it was Channel 5, and it was about a husband and wife, and she absolutely abuses him, but tells everyone it's him. And luckily, he put cameras in his house, Dave. It is fucking unbelievable. Talk about triggering. You know, so about people like this. And they even had the interviews with the police. You've got to, I'm not saying you've got to watch it, because a lot of people, even I was sat there fucking triggered, like, what the fuck? But it's unbelievable, this show. Honestly, it came on this week, and fucking hell, it was shocking. Absolutely shocking show.
Weird reality TV crossover here, but I never watched the actual Big Brother season, but there was that incident with the Big Brother stuff, wasn't there?
I watched it, yeah.
Yeah. Just like accused this bloke. Well, I can't remember now. Was it that he hit her or something like that?
He was joking, Ryan Thomas, it was, off Corrie. He's just won the Dancing on Ice as well this last week. But they've known each other for ages. She was on Emmerdale. He was on Corrie. I think she got booted off Emmerdale for doing this sort of stuff, you know, like really manipulating the situation and wild accusations. And all he did was they were in the house, and this hadn't come out about her at the time, and they were joking, and they got on really well. They were good friends. And all he did was like chatting to her, and he threw a couple of little shadow punches, joking. You know, like two friends would. Not in aggressive. It was in context with the conversation. Because I know it sounds different, a man throwing punches at a woman. You know what I mean? But he just sort of like caught a shoulder, as in like a bit of a, well, she went in then, didn't she? I've been assaulted and all this. Like, and then she got booted off then. It's ruined her career, because when everyone saw it, everyone was like, holy shit, why have you done that? You're on a 24/7 show with cameras. It was awful. He was in bits. He apologized to her and everything. He didn't need to apologize to her. I was awful that, Dave. Really?
I remember seeing you know, when he came out, he was in tears and stuff, because like he sort of gaslit into thinking, oh fucking hell, maybe I did do something, you know. So I guess, you know, it's interesting, like you say, 50 years or almost 50 years, isn't it? It's 49 years since this movie came out, but you know, how much of an imprint has it actually had on society? You know, if we're only starting to really talk about mental health in the last few years, I would say, you know, probably over 5 years now, isn't it? But it's more kind of in the zeitgeist, you know, people talk about it and stuff now, but the stuff in this is so, so clever. You know, just the way the character's written and just really subtly manipulative, and I just think it's amazing.
No, honestly, I'm with you. And just as a point of reference, Dave, it's called My Wife, My Abuse on Channel 5. I'm not saying anymore. Unfucking believable show, unbelievable. But anyway, again, let's bring it down. Sorry, but yeah. So I do think like the situation in the movie with Billy and, you know, this thing about the date, he wants to go on a date with Candy, doesn't he? You know, he's been let down, he's got the stutter. That's, again, it's another subplot, isn't it? All the way through. Like you say, the chief is the actual main character in the books. I've read that myself, and you're right. But obviously, the guy who played him, Dave, was a cop. He was just, he's never an actor. And basically, he was the right size for the character, live locally. So they got him in as, I was a sheriff or something, and that was his debut as a fucking actor. You know what I mean? But unbelievable, like they can do that with these different people. He just fits what the character's profile was from the book. But yeah, the whole thing with like McMurphy, when he wants to go, don't even cheat, I'm going, and every time he's going, you're right about that little sort of thing about life and the world just breaking him down. He won't actually go though, will he? He'll go for so long and then comes back, and I think towards the end of the movie, I think he's almost liking the security of being at this place with rules, even though he's trying to be like against the rules. I think that's what, even though he's trying to save him and help everyone, he's also one of them where he's looking out the window going, I don't know whether I actually want to go, sort of thing. Give me an excuse to stay. That's how I saw it anyway, how that played out towards the end of the movie.
Yeah. Say about things that haven't aged well in terms of just calling him the chief, you know, obviously a bit racially insensitive. However, it is fucking set in 1963, isn't it? So I don't think we should sort of whitewash, you know, it would have been kind of like that. And for me, you know, his acceptance, because everyone just treats him like, you know, he's deaf and dumb apparently, and so everyone just sort of ignores him. And that's, you find out later, he can actually speak, and that's sort of the way he likes it. Again, I think from the novel I was reading, basically his character, he'd come back from the war or something, and he found like his dad was a drunk and had sold his land and stuff like that. So he just kind of retreated as well. But when I started to warm to McMurphy a bit more is that relationship with him and the chief. You know, he's trying to bring him in to the basketball, isn't he? And he's working really hard to try and get him involved. And it's when the guards, you know, when the security sort of think they score a basket, and then he's just got his hand and he stops the fucking ball coming through. You're like, oh yeah, he's fucking massive.
You know? Yeah.
So yeah, I thought the relationship between McMurphy and the chief was one of the most heartwarming bits. And that's when, for me at least, you're thinking, oh yeah, Jack Nicholson's not just a complete dick, and you do definitely warm to him.
Yeah, you do. And I think the end, and you say about the build up towards the end of the movie, Dave, you're totally right. Fucking hell, the end bit, Jesus. You know, so obviously yeah. Billy, you know, we've got this whole thing where she realizes they've all been, you know, going out. She has a go at him, doesn't she? She's like, well, you know, you've been leaving. And then Billy talks to her, she's like, yeah, I know your mom and all this. And you're like, holy shit, you know, like, and he put him in the office. And I wasn't expecting it, Dave. I really wasn't. And then the nurse comes out screaming, and there's Billy fucking, you know, he's slit his yeah. bloody throat, hasn't he? And that he's fucking... he's dead sort of thing. And McMurphy then goes fucking dingy because she's just dead blasé about it, isn't she? She's just sort of like, yeah, well, and he has a, ultimately, it's McMurphy's sort of fucking end part of the movie, really. It absolutely spirals for him pretty quick.
Yeah. I mean, this is where, again, you've got that individuality, you know, pushing up against the system, pushing up against the confines around him, and ultimately fucking loses. You know, so Billy kind of, again, he'd obviously had this repressed home life, you know, and but he does definitely like girls. He just doesn't have that confidence. And McMurphy's like, oh, go on, you know. Yeah, like, it's like, it's not going to take that long, if you know what I mean. You know, he sort of gets his rocks off, doesn't he, for the first time, loses his virginity, but then that's when, you know, all of the build-up, all of the passive-aggressive stuff that Nurse Ratched had been doing, you know, really comes to the fore then, because she's basically threatening him in a very calm and level way, threatening him to have to tell his mother, which he is fucking terrified of. And she knows it, and she's intentionally fucking twisting the knife. She's really going for it. You know, well, you know me and your mother are good friends. I'm going to have to tell her. And it's like so fucking heartbreaking, isn't it? Because he, in that moment, he's petrified and just it takes the only way he sees as being a viable option out. So, yeah, really, really haunting. And that's where, like I say, you've had this whole movie to build up to this last few scenes, you know, Billy sort of slits his own throat to take himself out. You know, McMurphy launches for Ratchet, and in a moment you feel like, okay, he is actually going to choke the life out of her. You know, I mean, it's quite fucking brutal, isn't it, as well?
Yes.
You know, it makes you feel quite uncomfortable. You know, you're not particularly with McMurphy either. You know, she is the villain, but I'm not sure she should be strangled out, kind of thing. But then, I mean, we'd seen it, McMurphy get the electroshock treatment, haven't you? You know, earlier in the movie, and that was brutal enough. And then you kind of had that foreshadowing where he's pretending that he's almost been lobotomized, you know, and just walking, and he's just having a goof, having a laugh. But then, you know, that's the final villainous act, isn't it? She sent him to be lobotomized. And do you know much about lobotomies, Chris?
I know it's something to do with the brain, and it where they just
fucking stick like an ice pick through your eye and scrape out the language bit of your brain. That's the most evolved part at the front. And they basically scrape that away. And then you're more manageable as a patient, apparently. You know?
Fucking awful.
Fucking medieval shit. You know? Yeah. And so, because when I watched it, I didn't fully get that that's what had happened. I thought, you know, come on, Chief, you might snap out of this kind of thing. What are you doing?
Yeah. I did. I thought the same.
So now he's been lobotomized, and so, you know, he would, I mean, Chris, fucking, I would want to go the same way as McMurphy. If someone did that to me, just fucking take me out. Maybe snap my neck or something, a bit fucking, make it a bit easier for me, but, yeah, so he would have wanted it that way. But a really fucking uncomfortable, heartbreaking moment, you know, where the chief knows, you know, this is no way to lead his life. He was kind of this free spirit, you know, this larger than life personality. And so he smothers him with the pillow and then, you know, rips this fucking thing out of the floor, which McMurphy had said he'd try and do earlier, you know. And at that point, I was thinking, maybe he is in there for a reason. Like, who fucking thinks that they can lift that thing? Well, Chief can, you know, because he'd had that idea implanted earlier. And then it sort of breaks free and then walks off into nature. So, unbelievable ending, Chris. Oh. Not in a fucking happy way. I had to watch a bit of Ted Lasso at the end of it just to lift my spirits a bit. But fucking hell, so, so powerful.
Oh, honestly, I'm with you, Dave. Like, I wasn't expecting it. I thought McMurphy was going to get away when all the other patients were. And yeah, I mean, I've got to say, it was interesting the way Chief was like, oh, his thoughts. Like you say, I was the same going, what's going on here? And I do think because of what I said about maybe that's the whole point of McMurphy's character is he's actually been convicted of rape. It's not like a miscarriage of justice. Even as I said before, he even plays into it, leans into it, doesn't he? So maybe that's the whole point. He wasn't really a redeemable character sort of thing. And that's the whole point that he got taken out. But the fact is as well, I mean, fucking Chief picks up that marble basin, Dave. That would have weighed, and he's a big bloke. We know that. He's a big guy. He's not going to get very far though, Dave, is he? Let's be honest. I mean, he's about 6'6". They're going to catch him, but for the context of the movie, I did like the fact that all of them saw it as a bit of freedom, didn't they? All over patients, Christopher Lloyd's the character, Tim's the first one, and they're all cheering and everything, and he just gets off done in and goes. So, yeah, what a film. What a really, really powerful movie. These sort of movies, I dread going into it, but yeah, I really, really enjoyed it, Dave. I really did.
Yeah, I mean, the dream was they were going to escape to Canada. Yes. They were going to get over the border. And so I think, you know, Oregon is quite far north in the in that kind of west, northwest of America, I think. So, yeah, in my mind, Chris, Chief does get away. He does get over the border. I have to at least cling on to that bit.
Let's hope so, yeah.
Yeah. But,
brilliant, brilliant. So anything else, Dave?
No, I think let's get into our final review.
Let's go. So big thank you, Stephen. Honestly, really, really different pick. And I love when we really watch it. And this is a classic. This is a movie that The VHS Strikes Back. It's an absolute iconic movie. Like you say, it's all over when we were growing up and everything, and there's references to different people, actors who were in it. It launched their careers. But yeah, I really enjoyed it. I was really, really surprised that I did enjoy it as much. And the story it tells and Nurse Ratched, like iconic sort of baddie, but I think there is a redeemability about her until the end. And then she does become like a baddie and she's swept up in the system. But Murphy, he's just a fucking bell end. And I'm sort of glad, I think, now looking back, that he didn't end up getting the sort of hero's finish, really. I don't think that would have been right. But we got the Chief bit, and then at least we know somebody sort of went off into the sunset. So I'm going to put it, Dave, in Pleasantville. And it's a great movie, and I won't be averse to watching it again. It's a long movie, but and if you've never seen it before, it is one to sort of tick off the box 100%. So, yeah, great pick, Stephen. And really left me thinking about loads of different things. So, brilliant stuff. What about yourself, Dave?
Well, if anyone's guessing, probably no prizes for this one, but I'm going to send it to Cloud City. I just think I get it. I get the Nicholson stuff. I get the aura, the kind of legend around him and you know, why this movie made so many Oscars. Fuck me, if I've got a few hours on a Sunday, I don't think I'll be putting this on. You know, it's fucking, it's, like you say, it's over 2 hours, but Jesus, I mean, in terms of your headspace, it occupies much, much longer than that, you know, and but it's so layered. I just feel like I need to watch it more, but, you know, I need to also probably go into it in a good headspace. You know, if you're feeling a bit down, not the movie for you to watch in that moment. So it is so complex and really well shot, really well written, really well acted. Yeah, just absolutely brilliant. And I mean, we haven't really talked about the score, but I think the score was brilliant as well. I don't think that won as many awards, but it was nominated for quite a few. So yeah, just really, really heavy, heavy subject matter, but great, great movie, absolute classic. And you know, the spectrum that we've been across on the VHS Strikes Back is ridiculous, isn't it? You know, you've got something like this tackling really heavy subjects, and then you know, we'll do stuff like Ultimate Weapon with Hulk Hogan.
Legendary.
Or it was the other one more recently, wasn't it? Assault on Devil's Island.
What a fucking movie that was. That's going to be talked about in the same breath, Dave. What a fucking movie that was. But anyway, Dave, thank you for that as well. I had a feeling you're going to put it there. It's another Patreon pick, Dave, and it's our great friend, Lucky Lulu Green, who supports us across the VHS Strikes Back and the CD Reality Castle. Thank you so much for all the support that she gives us, Dave. Now, she's picked a movie, Dave, that I've talked about from the very start of the VHS Strikes Back, a movie that you couldn't believe I haven't watched, and one that a few people have mentioned and gone, we've got to get Chris watching this one. So, Dave, I'm finally going to tick this one off the Chris Phelps box of movies that I probably should have watched, but just thought, this isn't Bruce Lee, this isn't Jean-Claude Van Damme, this certainly isn't Lauren Avadon. Why the fuck would I watch this garbage? But anyway, we're going back to 1988, Dave, and it stars, a year before he became Batman, Mr. Michael Keaton, which I think everyone knows what this is going to be. So we're going to be reviewing Beetlejuice. So let's get into the trailer.
From the director of Pee-wee's Big Adventure, Adam and Barbara
never realized Alec Baldwin's in this.
Yeah.
Their house is being haunted by the living.
Don't know what you're gonna make of this, Chris.
No.
Don't hold out that much hope. I think you might actually hate this one.
So they're calling on Beetlejuice.
Beetlejuice.
Who's no ordinary ghost.
You don't want his help.
Can you be scary? What do you
think? How did he go from this to fucking Batman?
It's bonkers, isn't it? I mean, there was a big pushback, wasn't there? It's funny with Michael Keaton, the way he's revered now as being that Batman. But there was a massive pushback at the time. It was roles like this, I think, that put people off.
And he got slated for Batman. I remember when we were kids. Nobody really rated it. He's aged very well.
Yeah, and I think it was because people still thought of Adam West. That's the problem. But then when you look at it now, because we've had a darker, grittier Batman, you know, periodically, I think you look back at that 89 one and it isn't that far away from the Adam West Batman.
No, it's not. Well, Dave, I'm finally going to tick this one off the list. So thank you for picking that, Lucky Lulu Green. We do appreciate it. Really, really good stuff. Dave, we've actually got an email as well, which is really good. And it's not for surfing lessons. It's not for martial arts training. We received this yesterday. At first I thought, it's a wine. Is this, you know, we get these emails, so I thought, this has got to be a wine. Anyway, it's a genuine email. So apologies. But it's from one of our new listeners, Dave, called Lee. He's from Rotherham, and he's put, hi, Chris and Dave. I'm a delivery driver and found your podcast a few weeks ago, and I'm addicted to it now. You're both so easy to listen to, never boring, and both have great movie knowledge and absolutely love the banter on the show too. I have a handful of suggestions for you, if that's okay. So he's threw a few in there. So he's just said, Drop Dead Fred. I've not watched that for years, Dave. Ghost Dad, Jack Titan, and Canine, and he's put many thanks, Lee from Rotherham. So thanks, Lee, for taking the time to email us as well. We really appreciate new supporters there. And it's interesting getting some more UK listeners as well, Dave, isn't it? Because obviously for some reason we spread out, and the UK, we've got our core there, but it's really good to receive an email like that. So thanks very much, Lee. And there's plenty more. I would say with the movie knowledge, I would say Dave's the one with the movie knowledge. I'm literally just looking on Wikipedia half an hour before we record, but that doesn't matter. I've got knowledge. You know what I mean? And if you check the reviews, there's plenty of people saying we don't know what we're talking about. So that's a really nice compliment. There you
go. That's a nice contrast, isn't it? You know, periodically get fucking film students and stuff. These guys don't know anything. So it's nice to occasionally get an email like that. That's absolutely brilliant.
No, it's lovely. It's really good. No, thank you for that. If you do want to email us, like Lee, as VHSStrikesBack@gmail.com. If you want to follow us on social media, @VHSStrikesBack, please, if you get a chance and you have got a bit of time, drop us a review on your podcast catching app, guys. We really appreciate any reviews we get for the show, good or bad. It just helps us get up in them charts. And I say it every week, Dave will take great pleasure if someone's having a go at me, and I will do this. The reverse. And also, Dave, on the No Shit, No Surrender 3 watch-along update, we have slightly fell off on the viewing figures, but we have gained another 1,000 views on the video. We're now at 35,000 views for our watch-along on YouTube. So we have got a YouTube channel with a few of our shows on there, and there's a couple of watch-alongs as well. So No Shit, No Surrender 3, I would recommend, because we are leading the way on YouTube, Dave, which is amazing.
That is amazing. And weirdly, Chris, you know, because over on the comics, you know, we have done various reviews of things over the time, but we got a request through to review a book, Chris,
yes.
The Essential Guide to Hong Kong Movies. And so one of our friends and listeners, Max Byrne, I thought, well, he writes for various outlets and things, and so probably it would be a good thing for him to do. So I'll have a chat to Max, and we'll give our opinion. Really, it's going to be Max's regurgitated opinion, but we'll probably review that up on Fantastic Universes. But it looks like a great book. Forwarded, Chris, by Cynthia Rothrock.
I did see that, David. Yes, I did see that. I've just seen her on Facebook before as well, Dave. Looking rather nice, but there you go. Anyway, let's move on from that. So, Dave.
Validated, Chris. Like, actual. I mean, does that class us as like actual film reviewers? I mean, I don't know.
Dave, we are film reviewers.
Just like Anon or whatever you fucking. Oh, no, it was Anahom, wasn't it?
Yeah, that as well, Dave. Yeah, that one. But don't forget, though, we are reality TV experts as well. You just remember that.
That is true. That is true.
We are. TV critic as well, Dave. That's what we are. Amazing. Absolutely brilliant. But no, thank you, mate. And thanks, everyone, for today. I've really enjoyed this. I didn't know what we were going to get ourselves into. We had plenty of good chats and stuff. David, you know, usually we say, what are you going to take us out with today? But I don't know what to say to you, Dave, because a lot of the dialogue was quite powerful in this. So what do you want to do, Dave? Do you want to throw a little one-liner in there from the movie?
As I scroll through now, I mean, usually it's a lot easier when it's a bit of a comedy slash action movie. So I'm not going to get a quote, just say absolutely brilliant pick. It's going to be something a bit different for next week, obviously, with Beetlejuice. And I think we'll be back on our jovial form, hopefully. But Chris, and hopefully we'll forget about the football as well. But thank you very much, sir. Thanks to all our listeners out there. Thanks to all our supporters. And we'll speak to you next time.
Bye.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over. What the fuck are we gonna do now?
What are we gonna do?
Maybe we could build a fire, sing a couple of songs, huh? Why don't we try that?
We better get back, because it'll be dark soon, and they mostly come at night. Mostly.
I'll be back.
That's not.
We came, we saw, we kicked its ass.
Wax on, wax off.
Ding, ding.
Bust you up.
Go for it.
Well, here we go.
Ain't so bad. Ain't so bad. Ain't so bad. Come on. Ain't so bad. Ain't nothing.
You must be crazy or something.
I'm crazy.
You're just a stupid fool.
Yeah, maybe you're stupid.
I ain't breathing heavy.
He's a fool. He's stupid.
I've seen you at 6